Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Sexual harassment and sexual assault aren't necessarily about sex. It's about power, power over other people, and the power to keep them silent. But could the balance of power be shifting? The Me Too movement has exposed a side of American culture and culture in New Mexico that's opened up new conversations about sexual harassment and assault in the roundhouse, at work, and even in our schools. Over the past 3 weeks, we've opened up the phone lines to your stories and reflections on these issues. You can hear our past conversations about what the Me Too movement means for New Mexicans at KUNM.org. This week, we turn our attention to our youth and the unique challenges young people face when considering whether to come forward, and how the perspective of young people in this conversation is a key part of long-term change in our society. Have you experienced harassment or assault in high school or college? Did you report your experiences, and did school officials do anything about it? Were you harassed as a teen? How did that shape who you are today? We welcome your calls this hour. Join us by calling 277-5866. If you're more comfortable writing down your thoughts, send an email to letstalk@kunm.org or use the hashtag letstalk on Twitter. And if you're a survivor and want to share your story but don't want to use your name today, you can also call in anonymously. Just tell the call screener. I'm joined in studio today by Christina Rodriguez, a student at UNM and fellow with Generation Justice. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Caitlin Henke is a program specialist with the Women's Resource Center at UNM. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Also by phone, we have Abriana Morales, founder of the Sexual Assault Youth Support Network, and she's in Las Cruces. Thanks for joining us, Abriana.
Thank you for having me.
Also, Autumn Gomez, a youth organizer with Tewa Women United. Autumn is Taos, Pueblo, and Comanche. Thanks for being here, Autumn.
Thank you. Yoho. Good morning.
Christina, I want to start with you. There have been so many national stories in recent weeks. How are you seeing young people in New Mexico talking about these issues?
I feel like there's this like invisible energy of all of these women feeling this reckoning and seeing these news stories, especially as a young person and a young woman of color, a student, a journalist, a survivor. And when you see that, you kind of reckon with your own experiences and how that relates to that. And I think young people, especially having access to the internet and using a hashtag, have really built these spaces where they can share their stories and maybe where they feel comfortable sharing their stories for the first time. And seeing a lot of themselves and other people and celebrities that they look up to, and understanding that that trauma isn't in isolation and that trauma is actually a place where people are finding strength. And I think I've seen Facebook groups and you know, just threads of people being able and comfortable to call things out in a different way that's ever happened in our history, I feel like. And I think it's no mistake, like, there's the net neutrality vote today. Like, people in power are kind of intimidated by women really reclaiming their voices in that way and using the internet in innovative ways to inform their own experiences and to find power in that, too.
One of the things I've seen in the conversation is kind of this tension between people who say, oh, my gosh, I'm so surprised, and people who say, this is just confirming what I already knew. Where are you kind of in that conversation?
Yeah, I feel like it's totally just confirming what we already knew. Like, nothing's changed. It's just that it's a different platform for us to elevate our voices. And it's a way for us to have the conversation in safety. You know, this is about physical safety. Like, sexual assault is such a physical traumatic experience that I think it is interesting to see it be elevated online or in radio or in all of these different ways, because it gives us a different way to reckon with that feeling that's so internalized. And I think that collective process is how we build power and how we find public policy reform or change in the legal system to begin with. Like, right now, this is the social reckoning, and hopefully that will lead to like a legal reckoning in the future for people to be accountable with.
Abriana, you're a survivor, and you've also chosen to speak publicly about the need to support children and teens. How did people react when you first decided to speak out?
It was a very mixed reaction. I think amongst my support group, my parents, my close family, and some close friends, the response was greatly positive. The outbreak of my organization was actually a post on Facebook asking other survivors in my community to see if they would like to participate in a photo series. And it essentially blew up. It got hundreds of likes, hundreds of comments, and people just really supported and loved the idea that we were incorporating and integrating this new way to support youth survivors in a way that had never been done before.
So you're also finding that support and that community online.
Yes, definitely.
What do you think are some of the challenges that young people face when deciding whether to report it? It's hard for anyone, but what's unique about the experiences of teens and young people who are deciding to come forward?
I think that one of the main challenges that youth face when considering speaking out, especially publicly about their experiences, is the remaining stigma surrounding sexual assault. Frankly, the stigma surrounding sexual assault is one of the largest inhibitors of survivors speaking out about their experiences. The fear of social ostracism and societal shame is present and prevents them from openly discussing their stories. So there's also different intricate psychological and personal things that can deter them from speaking publicly or reporting. So child sexual abuse often involves manipulation and grooming with undue influence from the perpetrator, asserting control and inciting fear. So this creates an internal conflict for the child, so they feel faced with the responsibility of keeping the secret in fear of what will occur if they speak out. So this leads them to remain silent, and it becomes something of a survival mechanism. So a study, the Child Sexual Abuse Accommodation Syndrome, published by Ronald Summit in 1983, does a really great job at explaining the mental and emotional coping of a child sexual abuse victim.
Autumn, I want to bring you in here, too. What's been your reaction as you've been watching people talk openly, especially online, about surviving sexual harassment or assault?
I think that the whole Me Too movement really goes along with, from my perspective, the decolonization movement and the indigenous interest in bringing more of a matriarchal voice to our people and to what we are trying to do as communities.
Yeah, returning to those indigenous values as the center, right?
Exactly. A lot of our communities have been unrightly moved to the patriarchy, and it's kind of really refreshing to see more women speak out and be strong and have that voice that we've been seeing. And it's not only in the Native community, it's like the global community that's really finally coming to this more matriarchal perspective. And it's refreshing, and, a lot has had to happen for this to happen now, but I'm really glad it is.
Yeah. It seems like, this kind of cuts across all groups, all backgrounds of people coming forward with a unique story, a unique experience, but some similarities, too. Are you listening today and you want to share your story? We want to hear from you. The number to call, 277-5866. You can also send an email to letstalk@kunm.org or use the hashtag letstalknm on Twitter. We'd really like to hear from some young people today to hear about their experiences. But also, if you experience sexual harassment or assault as a teen or a young person and can reflect back now and know how that's influenced your life, we want to hear from you. Again, 277-5866. Caitlin, you work with young people at UNM, probably people of all ages, let's be honest. At UNM, we have a really diverse student body. But particularly for the young women you're working with, has this Me Too movement changed what's going on at the Women's Resource Center? Is anything different?
I have a little bit of a cold. That's been asked to me a few times, and I've been really thinking about it because in some ways in the center, it really doesn't feel much different. And it's made me really think how privileged I've been to be in an environment that is really naturally trauma-informed, very much supports survivors. I mean, there's visual reminders throughout the center, like everywhere. But what I am seeing is students that are coming in or students that work there or part of the WRC community feel really validated by what's happening outside. That it's not just happening in the center anymore, that conversations that we have regularly are being mirrored in their classrooms, on their drives to school and work, at the dinner table with their families. So I think it's been really validating, but it hasn't changed so much of how the center has operated right now. It's just mirrored the reality that we've already been really deep in.
Yeah. Do you think that it could change some of your future work if there's this broader conversation happening in the community around you?
will your work be a little easier?
Yeah.
Will people be at a different point when they start talking to you?
I think that's definitely possible. I also think, I work a lot with survivors navigating reporting and getting accommodations and resources. And what I'm starting to hear is survivors coming forward and saying, it's really different than I thought it would be. People believe me. Or I was really nervous about how to explain what exactly had happened to me because I'm still trying to comprehend it myself. And seeing that when they're disclosing to people, that there's a different reaction, a little bit maybe more acceptance, more understanding, less questions, and more people sort of saying, I believe you.
Yeah. Autumn, I want to come back to you. You work with young people, including middle school students, through Tewa Women United. What do you think is the potential in educating young people, starting those conversations early?
I think that's the most important part of my work is teaching healthy communication, a healthy way to have relationships, and teaching sex ed, too. I have discovered that young people really, both femme and masculine young people, really want the accurate information. We have heard stories of, oh, my sex ed was just telling us how to put deodorant on because we're hitting puberty now and things like that. But young people really want accurate information. They want to know how to healthily begin and end relationships. And I like to let them know as an older role model that it's up to our generations to end the cycle of sexual and physical violence and violence against their land as well. And I think middle school is the perfect age to begin having these conversations.
That makes me think, I've heard a lot of saying, you know, we need to hold men accountable, which is true. But how can we at that age with young men empower them and not just say this is what you don't do, but this is what you do do to have healthy relationships?
I think that communication is a huge thing. I think a lot of times men are not, you know, allowed to communicate their emotions, which, you know, leads to an unhealthy expression of that. And I think just telling them from young age that they're accountable for all of their actions and that in smaller insulated communities especially is that there's always somebody watching them and not judging them, but people, you know, kind of know how you are and know how you behave and they can tell what kind of person you are. And I think that resonates with a lot of the young men that I've encountered.
Yeah. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. Our focus today is how young people in New Mexico are responding to the Me Too movement. We want to hear from you. What do teens and young adults bring to this conversation that can help us as a community move forward? Call in now 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We're also live tweeting the show. Send us your comments using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. And if you're a survivor and want to share your story today but don't want to use your name, you can call in anonymously. Christina, Autumn was just mentioning small communities kind of holding each other accountable. Small communities can also be difficult to report. It can be really tough when you don't have another, you know, everybody. Everybody's your cousin or your family friend. Are you hearing people talking about that as well in New Mexico?
I think so. And I think that's powerful, but it's dangerous. I think even with the Me Too movement and this social kind of perception of sexual assault changing, it's still not necessarily safe for most people to reckon with their abusers in that way because the community is so small. And I've seen a lot of women in online spaces when they share their story, they say, oh, I've had a really similar experience to that as well. And then they find out the abuser was the same person. And I think that that's just been incredible for me to see groups of women reckoning with the same person and then taking steps collectively to get that abuser. And I think that kind of narrative isn't really shared often. And it is in that, like, secluded spaces. You know, like, we talk about this in whisper networks, and we are moving that to a more digital realm, which I think is interesting because it is dangerous still. And it is, it just takes a lot of bravery and courage to be a survivor and to share that story and to have that strength and support. And I think in that way it can be, you know, it's not perfect, but it's necessary, and it's moving and it's changing because of that risk that it takes, honestly.
Christina Rodriguez is a student at UNM and fellow with Generation Justice. We also have Caitlin Hinke here, a program specialist with the Women's Resource Center at UNM. On the phone, Abriana Morales, sexual assault survivor and founder of the Sexual Assault Youth Support Network, and Autumn Gomez, youth organizer with TEWA Women United. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. The number to call to join our conversation today, 277-5866. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Composer Randall Wolf wrote this for flutes and piano and said he was chiefly concerned with avoiding the flowery, dainty side of the flute. It's called Righteous Babe, music he wrote for Tara Helen O'Connor. She's in concert at the Spoleto Festival USA on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This week on University Showcase, a new symposium will bring back graduates in science, technology, engineering, and math fields who have left New Mexico, but who want to return by matching them with employers.
This group of people has the potential to be state leaders. They have a potential to bring things back to New Mexico that we have no access to right now.
A new approach to stopping our brain drain. That's University Showcase this Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Our focus this hour is young people and the Me Too movement. Do you work with teens? What have you done to make it easier for them to know they can come to you to report sexual harassment or assault? What do you think is different about the experience of young people who are coming forward to share their story? The number 277-5866 is how you join the conversation today. You can also use Let's Talk NM as a hashtag on Twitter. Caitlin, we've heard some of these issues, that unique challenges for young people, including in small communities, it may be difficult to come forward. UNM is its own community. Do you hear that coming forward and raising concerns about someone in the community would be
so much? Yeah, that's such a common concern when people are, you know, deciding if it's a good fit for them to report. And I think what I see so much that is really hard for me to negotiate and understand is friend groups. That sometimes, you know, disclosing in a friend group is just as painful as the assault. When friend groups turn on you or don't believe you or initially show up supportive and then go away. And like you said, sexual assault is so much about power. And sometimes coming forward and talking about sexual assault is shaking the power tree. And it's so hard to predict what will happen. Especially in communities like, you know, athletics, Greek, a specific program or academic community you're in, it can really rattle things, which in some ways, when you were saying, Christina, like how amazing that can be when people come together and realize that, you know, there's one abuser or perpetrator that people are able to kind of identify, and how amazing that can be. Sometimes that happens and it's so powerful. And other times I think people are just utterly heartbroken, so damaged by how communities show up for you after you make a disclosure that is so vulnerable.
Mm, absolutely. Is there something we can do to help train, educate, support people to show up for friends and peers?
That's a conversation we're having so much on campus right now. I think this helps. this type of radio show, people talking about where sexual assault happens, which is everywhere, to everyone. And I think the more people who are talking about it and get it and get the realities of this type of trauma, the the better they are. Someone just brought me water. The better people can respond because they know better. You know, the thing that we're seeing on campus, the things that work are really talking and demonstrating what healthy relationships look like, and that should be by peers and true bystander intervention. And the only way people can show up for their friend groups, be a good bystander, intervene, and talk about healthy relationships is having a continued platform.
And it's been brought up that, you know, this idea of serial offenders, when people are connecting the dots that it's the same person. Many offenders are serial offenders, and it's estimated many campus sexual assaults could be prevented if the offender was caught and faced consequences after the first or second assault. Christina, do you think enough is being done to get predators off campus?
I think, I mean, historically, UNM has had issues having the Office of Equal Opportunity, UNMPD, the Women's Resource Center, like everyone coordinate because of the Title IX DOJ investigation that happened a year and a half ago in April 2016. And I think a lot of people were just confused on how to report to begin with. And I think that although a lot has changed and there has been a lot of work done, and perhaps maybe because of these social movements that more cases are being reported, I do think it's interesting that there are these serial abusers, and a lot of them probably have a good reputation in the community. And that initial shock is a deterrent for a lot of people to report. And the trauma of reporting your assault, the questions that you're asked, the language that we have, and the conversations that you have to have afterwards add this whole other dimension. So I think that on top of like that social stigma, you have that institutional level of kind of pressure and that worry of that trauma, that you're integrating it with your student experience. I think that's just kind of, it's really sad, and I expect better from the university, and I just will constantly hold them to that standard, because that's where we have to move as a society, is just always striving to make it a better experience that shouldn't even be an experience to begin with. So
yeah. An anonymous male caller, he doesn't want to be on the show today, says he was sexually assaulted in a church setting, and he hopes kids never have to go through what he did, and that abuse should never stay secretive. Thank you for calling in and sharing your story with us, even if you couldn't go on air today. I'd like to go now to Mary in Santa Fe. Mary, what would you like to add to our conversation?
Well, I think y'all are right on spot on in that we need to keep the conversation going. I co-coordinated the national Me Too monologues and co-facilitated the Santa Fe ones, and y'all had yours on Saturday night in Albuquerque, and 9 women came out and shared their stories, and they went through a workshop in a very safe container, and we did the same thing here, and women are doing it across the country as part of the movement. And so creating safe space for each other to share our stories, not in the friend groups where people are going to betray you, but really being mindful of creating that safety. And another comment I want to make is about the young women now and men who have the ability to speak out with more ease than we did when I was growing up. You know, this happened to me too. I came of age in the 70s, and the patriarchy was so oppressive and we were so silenced that there was really nowhere to turn, and we turned against ourselves. And now is the time for us not to do that. And the majority of the women in the Me Too monologues were women who were much older, who carried these wounds from their youth and from their childhood. And this is the first time a lot of them ever spoke to what happened to them. So it's so important. I just urge all the young people and women and men who are older, too, to it's not too late to share your story, but do so in a place that's safe, in therapy, in groups, with people that there's trust for. And let's keep this conversation going and keep the momentum of the movement going at the Roundhouse in our state capitol, February 10th. is 1 billion rising. So that's a really powerful way to connect with people. So I invite you all to 1 billion rising on February 10th. So thank you so much for taking my call, and let's keep uniting and supporting each other. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in today, Mary. Autumn, I want to come back to you. Tewa Women United works on this issue and so many other issues for women, families, and communities. How are you incorporating the teachings and values of tribal elders into your work and curriculum?
Well, our curriculum that we bring to the middle school is based on teachings or on lessons developed by Tewa elders, and it follows the life model of a corn. So from the beginning, when the farmer asks the Mother Earth for consent to plant his seed, to the corn growing, sprouting, becoming mature, and then finally being a being that gives and is able to feed the community, we teach the young people that their life is parallel to the life cycle of the corn, and I feel like it acknowledges our relationship to the land, and it also acknowledges our interconnectedness to the entire natural world. And especially in a time when everything is digital, it's a great refresher to come back to that way of being.
Yeah, that I'm curious about that. That as I was listening, you talk about you're incorporating these values that give young Native people strength into the digital space. Is there a way to some creative ways to do that?
I definitely think so, and I think that it's happening. I personally know that I'm not the only young Indigenous person to learn about feminism and activism online. And I think that the more we learn about it in our smaller communities, the more we'll be able to produce content that focuses on our experience, and we can share that with the world. And it's amazing.
Abriana, you know, let's come back to you. If we're talking about friends maybe not supporting people, if parents aren't available to offer support, who else do you think can step up in communities across the state to support young people in New Mexico? Where can they go?
There's a variety of resources available to youth that don't find support among parents per se. Definitely, in Southern Mexico, we have La Pinon, a really great resource that is a child advocacy center, rape crisis center, and they provide therapy and such. I'm not really entirely sure about the resources specifically to Northern New Mexico, but I think that peer advocacy and peer support, even if it's absent of like a professional setting, is definitely something incredibly important. Like from my organization, Sexual Assault Youth Support Network, in my own experiences, I've actually been able to help and facilitate the reporting of another individual, a peer of mine, that was considering reporting for so long and was so afraid to do it, and then really navigating that process and allowing her to come forward. So peer support and peer advocacy is incredibly crucial to allowing people to find the strength, find the empowerment and support to go forward and report these crimes and find the way to heal, to cope, and, you know, recover.
Yeah. We also put a link to resources on our post for this page, Let's Talk New Mexico. That's on KUNM.org. And Abriana, New Mexico is a rural state, lots of small communities. We were talking about that just a minute ago, how it can be challenging to report in a small community. But it can also be challenging to get support if you need to travel long distances and maybe you don't have a car. Is that something that you're seeing as well?
Definitely. Back in the 1960s and 70s with the anti-rape movement, which aligned with second wave feminism, the rise of rape crisis centers, the beginning of them, actually occurred in the most progressive, most metropolitan areas, and that's kind of where it stayed. Unfortunately, the smaller towns, rural communities didn't really ever catch up to the resource availability for sexual assault survivors. And so we're still seeing that today, like areas like Portales, Carlsbad, they don't necessarily have the same amount or the same quality of resources that people in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, or Las Cruces might have. And that spreads across the nation. So definitely creating a standard and creating a unified approach to sexual assault survivors and supporting them is something that needs to happen.
That's Abriana Morales in Las Cruces. Are you listening right now and this is resonating with you? Are you listening from a rural community or you had an experience in a rural community and you didn't have access to support and the resources you needed? We want to hear about your experience. Call 277-5866. That's 277-5866 or use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Caitlin, Abriana just brought up an interesting point that I've been thinking about. The Women's Resource Center started in the 1970s at UNM, the same time as the Women's Rights Movement, all these things happening. Do you see some connections between the 70s and today?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, the Women's Resource Center is one of the oldest in the country. 1972, I think we were maybe even before Berkeley. And actually thinking about what she was just saying about Rape Crisis Center starting in metropolitan areas, the Rape Crisis Center here started at the WRC. And I think even though we're always saying, like, this is not only a women's issue, we're so engaged in it and have been engaged in it since the day we opened our doors. It's so part of the framework of how we respond. It's feminism, you know, making this world more accessible, more trauma-informed, more tolerable, and activism is absolutely at the deepest held core value of what we do.
You've mentioned trauma-informed a couple of times this hour. For folks who aren't familiar with that term, what does it mean?
I think really understanding biologically and other ways how trauma affects people's brains, things like how they recall things, how they tell stories, how trauma can have long-lasting effects on a person long after the event is so key to understanding how to best respond to someone. You often hear about when people would tell their stories to, like, law enforcement or other reporting agencies, and you could see that people were trying to pick apart their story and figure out where they could squeeze in some blame on this person. Could really tell that people didn't really understand the deep, deep effects of what sexual assault and sexual misconduct and harassment does to people. So now being trauma-informed is really understanding how trauma affects us all, how long it lasts, how deep it lasts, how it affects our memory, our pain, our ability to relate and connect to people again. And I think people are really trying to figure out how to best support survivors. And that's the best way, is to really understand biologically what trauma can do.
Christina, you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, I just think it's so important that we have trauma-informed everything. I mean, we have trauma-informed reporting even, and I think that has been really important for me, and I think the young people that we work with, is to understand that these stories that we hear and are the stories that we begin to tell ourselves. Like, if we hear a story enough, it's not just for entertainment or for information. Like, this adds to this, like, social and political imaginary, or, like, perhaps mythology of how we interpret these interactions and how we label the things that do happen to us. And I think that has so much to do with how we report. And I think without having that support network, or without having, like, feminists online teaching you how to address these things, or perhaps warning you about that reporting process and how you handle police questioning you and, like, why didn't you stop this, or how come you didn't know this person that well, or, you know, like, those kind of questions that turn the blame on you. Without having that notion of, and that expectation of that, and understanding why society will perceive a crime against you like that, I think is just incredibly important. And I think a way that media plays a large role in this, the cloudiness around the language that we use between sexual assault and rape and sexual harassment. And I've seen stories that say sex allegations, and it's just like, what are you talking about? Like, there's so much confusion. And I think growing up as a young woman, you read that and you internalize that in different ways. And I just think that we really need to have a larger conversation and move forward in how we even talk about this issue on the surface.
What language would be clearer for you? What would you like to see change in the language we use?
And that requires a balance, too, both in trauma-informed reporting and just how we talk about this. I think being too graphic and detailed is triggering, but at the same time, kind of hearing sexual assault be this blanket term for so many different levels of abuse and trauma kind of erases the serial patterns that women identify in our own networks that I feel like we are only seeing be uncovered in the media as of recently, to see the, you know, narratives around power and not this just being a purely like sexual experience, but that this is definitely an exertion of power and dominance that has informed so many of our lives and how we interact with power in all the different areas of our life.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We're hearing how young people, particularly teens, are reacting to the Me Too movement and sharing their experiences with sexual harassment and assault. It's very complicated. As Christina just said, the language we use is important. What do you want to add to the conversation today? Has your child or grandchild experienced sexual harassment or assault? How did you deal with that as a family? Or are you trying to help someone right now and you're not quite sure what's the best thing for you to do next? Give us a call today, 1-877-899-5866. That's also 277-5866. And if you're a survivor and want to share your story, you don't have to use your name today. You can call in anonymously. Just let the call screener know.
There's still plenty of time to donate your unwanted car or truck to KUNM and get a tax deduction for 2017. No matter when it sells, your deduction is taken in the year you donate it. Often, even if it has body damage or major mechanical problems and has to be sold as salvage, it will still qualify you for a substantial tax deduction. To see if your vehicle qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
After an earlier permit was shot down, the Hawaii Board of Land and Natural Resources voted again to grant a permit for the controversial 30-meter telescope project. The $1.4 billion telescope is slated to sit atop Mauna Kea, a mountain that many Native Hawaiians consider sacred. We'll get deeper into this on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Again, the number to call in today, 277-5866, or use the hashtag Let's Talk NM. We have a Twitter comment from Hunter. This Me Too movement has helped me see that actions I thought were typical, such as groping, can also be included in the conversation. As a high school and college student, I was groped several times. It felt horrible, but it was different from the other stories. Christina, you want to kind of react to that of people maybe saying, well, it's not that bad. It's not worth telling anybody.
Exactly. I think even in the reporting at UNM about sexual harassment and the numbers in the Cleary report that the police have to file every year, I think that there are different categories and most people report on the rape and the sexual assault. But groping is a whole other category where there's much larger numbers that I was personally surprised by when you look into it. And I just think that, I mean, statistically, when they break it down into numbers like that, not only is that, you know, a level of oppression, I think, but it's surprising to see this kind of like playing field of the different levels of sexual assault. And I think that that itself is also damaging because that's just as traumatic. It's just as much a power move. And it influences and is usually a starting point for a larger pattern that abuser will use. I think that abusers tend to start small and then kind of work into larger and more violent assaults. And I think that that's, without being able to identify that, I think that's also really dangerous.
It has an impact on you. I was groped by a guy the week I moved here near the UNM campus, and a lot of people have told me I'm overreacting to it, but I didn't feel safe for years around here. Years. And I felt crazy for feeling unsafe walking around, you know, UNM.
Oh, totally. You know? I mean, that would destroy your whole sense of safety. I mean, I think, boy, when people come in and they say something like that, and, you know, just because the level of sort of crime that happens right outside the university on Central, and people come in and talk about how challenging is to sometimes ride the bus or be in that area of Central and how scary it is. And that when they tell people how dismissive they can be, I think, oh my gosh, yeah, that plays with your entire sense of safety and transportation, ability to move around freely and feel like you can go where you need to go and do what you need to do. And it's a huge deal. It's, oh God, it's infuriating when people are so dismissive of that.
And Christina, you'd mentioned earlier, like, the student experience that would have an incredible, if that happened on or near campus, a student who's got several more years to go in their education, it seems like that'd be a really difficult experience.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I remember when I first started at UNM, I was walking to a friend's house right outside the C&J building, less than a block away from campus, and got assaulted for the first time. And I just think it's incredibly influential to your whole college experience. And I think that so many women on their way to UNM, part of their school supply list is to get pepper spray or a knife or whatever they need to protect themselves. And I just think that's unacceptable as a society in that it's generational. Our parents know that that's a necessity. And that's not just living in Albuquerque. That's not just UNM. Like, that's a national, that's a global issue. And it's a historic pattern that we have seen. And I just think that that damages our ability to just do our work as students or as a female journalist. If you can't walk alone to get the story, like, there's so many boundaries that creates, not only for your personal, like, success, but for the work that you do and your capability to succeed. And I think in a lot of ways I've been influenced by that, and I see everyone I know that has to worry about taking a night class or where they park, even here at KUNM, you know. And so I think it's dangerous when your physical safety is something that is your responsibility constantly to be aware of your surroundings. And I think that's another kind of dangerous narrative that we constantly see and have normalized.
Autumn Gomez from Tewa Women United, I want to bring you back in here. The rates of violence against Native women are much higher than other groups. And how are Native women talking with each other about supporting themselves now and working on that long-term change to make sure that women are safer?
Well, I think that, again, coming from small communities, it's really hard to get the support you need. But also with the whole Me Too movement, this re-emergence of matriarchal thinking, I think women are coming together and telling their stories, sharing their experiences, and really trying to enlighten the younger generation about what they don't need to keep, you know, as a secret, or they don't need to keep these experiences hidden from them, at least from the other women of the community. And from my understanding, that is how Tewa Women United started, is by a group of women who were concerned for their safety and for the issues going on in the communities, and they came together and brought forth this wonderful organization. But this kind of tradition continues. Women getting together, letting each other know that they support each other, letting each other know that they believe each other. And although, like, the whole tackling, you know, reporting and tackling, how are we slowly changing our small communities and societies to no longer want this kind of behavior or allow this kind of behavior? it's really, I think, is what's going on right now.
It's really big. Do you want to see a different response from elders? Is there something that tribal elders in the communities you work with could do to encourage these kinds of conversations right now, encourage some change?
That's a tricky ground to cover. And I'm from a different community from where I work, so I don't see it firsthand. With the young people that I work with. But I think that there are some still very old-fashioned ways of thinking, and those are the powers that be right now. So I think my challenge is just to let young people know that they're accountable to their entire community. They're accountable for their own actions, and hopefully we'll see, even if it's slow, a change in the way that we look at things.
It's a powerful place to put young people in, to say you're a leader right now. It seems like that's an important part of change.
Yes, that's the most important thing, is I expect my young people that I encounter to act as leaders, because they are the leaders. And even if they're not sitting on the tribal council, they're influencing their younger peers, and they're influencing the people around them.
Absolutely. Autumn Gomez from Taboo Women United. I want to go now to an anonymous caller in Albuquerque. It seems like you have a question for us today.
Yeah, so I'm in my 50s now, but I was at 14, I was raped by an adult. And I never reported it. I never told my mom. And I didn't want to tell my mom because I just knew how much it would hurt her. And so I'm wondering, like, if there's young women out there who are under 18 and they're raped or assaulted, especially if it's pretty serious and it's a chargeable offense, what resources are available to them? Can they go through the administrative system without having to work through their parents? Because that can be a stop to reporting.
Absolutely. And thank you for calling in and thinking of those young women today. I appreciate you sharing your story. Caitlin, where can young women go today?
You know, one of the best first stop places in Albuquerque is the Family Advocacy Center downtown on Silver. They try to be comprehensive of everything: rape crisis, SANE, DVRC, police, advocates available. And you can go in any time. You don't have to give your name. You don't have to identify yourself, but you can absolutely get resources, support, and services. Our doors are always open, too. I mean, we mainly serve as advocates for students, but our resources and our doors are open to everybody. And so if you can't remember that, you could just remember to call the Women's Resource Center. I'd be happy to talk to anyone to direct them and get them the right services that they need.
We do have links to the Family Advocacy Center and your organization, the Women's Resource Center, at KUNM.org, and some other organizations throughout New Mexico. Christina, we've talked about hashtags, we've talked about online spaces. Hashtags can bring people together now to share their story now. But does that necessarily lead to, like, policy changes and real changes? Like, what's the next step?
Yeah, I love seeing all of these stories in that weird way that you don't feel isolated. But that vulnerability also at first just kind of triggered the idea to me that, well, what's going to happen because of this? And will there be policy change? Will there be that legal reckoning? And I just think that especially we see this mesh of celebrity and the political and our personal lives. And I hope that will create, you know, change on a larger level, and to identify these men in power, whoever they may be, and to remove that power from them. But I just hope for the future that it does lead to something like that. I hope, even as Autumn said, if it takes a long time, like, I just don't want to raise more generations of young people who feel like this is an acceptable standard or behavior for people in power to have. And I think that the more we change this conversation and the more that we have this conversation, the more this is based on trauma and the more that it's based on survivors and the actual, like, valid experience. I think right now we still see a lot of, like, credentialing and, like, women having to relive this terror and humiliation and talk about literally how traumatic it is. And then at the same time, like, prove their own credibility and their own, like, identity and importance to that conversation. And I just think that hopefully this will lead to enough people being outraged by the realities of this and working locally and nationally to make that change.
Abriana Morales, you created the Sexual Assault Youth Support Network. What's your vision for helping young people step up to support their friends and classmates in the future?
I think that definitely, as the founder of the Sexual Assault Youth Support Network, our principles are support, empowerment, and connection. And I think that definitely an issue, one of our deficits as a society is understanding. We have very limited understanding of sexual assault, dynamics, trauma, coping, and that contributes to the stigma, shame, and silence that I mentioned previously. By integrating the support systems for youth and by promoting public education surrounding sexual assault, victim blaming, rape culture, consent, trauma, we can cultivate a community where all survivors of sexual assault can feel understood, valued, and supported. So as far as working specifically with young survivors, again, support, empowerment, connection is incredibly important. By supporting them, we allow them to find their voices, and by empowering them, we allow them to speak out. By connecting them, we allow them to speak strongly together. There's power in numbers, and the Sexual Assault Youth Support Network is definitely something that has an effort and a vision to unite survivors with one another, to see that they aren't alone, and that no matter where they are, that through web interaction, through social media, that they can interact, be understood, and feel as if they're not alone.
And those connections can be made online, they can be made in person. Caitlin, what about you? What would you like to see emerge, maybe even next year, out of this Me Too movement here in New Mexico?
I'm the co-chair of the Sexual Misconduct and Assault Response Team at UNM, and we are a really diverse group of first responders, law enforcement advocates, medical and counseling providers, people who do conduct, and we aim to collaborate and respond in the best way that's victim-centered and victim-directed. And what I would love to see is that the information that we get doesn't always have to come from survivors. You know, I hate that that weight is always on the shoulders of people who have survived something like this to inform us all how to do better. It's all of our responsibility. And what I would love to see is that, you know, even if that's an entry point for people in the community or campus to tap into this response team of people who have collaborated and collectively come together because they want to do the best for people, that we're getting feedback and we're all taking it on so that, you know, if you're a family member or a friend of someone who has survived something like this and you have feedback about what would have made this better for them or ways that we could be more sensitive or things that would have made a really huge difference, we want to hear that. And it really is everybody's responsibility. And I would like to see that responsibility diversified a little bit.
Christina, you're nodding. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is placed on us, and our voices are shaky enough when we're going through that kind of trauma. And I just think that it's just so important that us as a whole come together, and even those who may not have experienced this, to understand, you know, how intense this has been for generations and generations of women and men getting abused sexually, and how I think that it's that anger and that fear that should inspire social change. If it's not the strength of these stories, it should be the shame that we haven't changed anything in our society over the past 50 years and over the course of our entire world, you know. So I just think it's our responsibility as a whole.
And it's so intense for people to be engaging in this conversation right now with thinking about their own experiences and their own memories there at the same time. Thank you to everyone who sent us messages today. And thank you for listening today, even if you didn't call in. We appreciate you being part of the conversation by listening and by maybe sharing some information and resources with other people. That's all the time we have. Thank you again. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter or go to KUNM.org where you can leave your comments and share the show with people you know. We posted links to resources in the communities across New Mexico on today's show post. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast on YouTube, iTunes. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls today. Victor Onimole live tweeted the show. Marisa DeMarco produced, and Elaine Baumgartel is the executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico.